been working. Know them working.
Hello and welcome to the Community Broadband Bits podcast, a production of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance and MuniNetworks.org. I'm Lisa Gonzalez. In our 19th episode, Christopher Mitchell interviews John St. Julian from Lafayette, Louisiana. John is a local organizer who was heavily involved in the community's efforts to invest in a municipal fiber network. Christopher and John talk about Lafayette's struggle to overcome the lies generated by incumbent telecommunications giants. Cox and others wanted to stop the community's investment in its own fiber network. As a special treat for our audience, listen for an actual example from one of the many deceitful telephone push polls conducted as the referendum drew near. Eventually, however, the community overcame the lies, passed the referendum, and have never looked back. We include the complete telephone conversation on our website. Now to Chris and John.
John St. Julian, thank you so much for joining me on the Community Broadband Bits podcast. You are one of the main forces that was an influential organizing force in Lafayette throughout the many years in which there was a battle about whether or not to build a municipal fiber-to-the-home network. So thank you for joining me.
Oh, thanks. Always a pleasure.
Hey, we learned about you from your prolific writings, and I think we'll get into that in a little bit. But first, can you tell us a little bit about Lafayette for those poor souls that have not read my case study on it or aren't familiar with your Lafayette Pro Fiber blog?
It would be a great idea for folks to read that study, incidentally.
Thank you.
I love that. Lafayette's, I guess, what people would call a mid-sized city. It's located deep in the South, but also deep inside Acadiana, what we here call Acadiana, which is Cajun culture and Creole culture. And that's probably something really worth understanding, I guess, that there's a real insularity here in both positive and negative senses. There's a still alive French culture, there's a still alive alternate music scene that has deep roots. And those differences can be interesting when they're played out against the background of big national and international causes like telecommunications for municipalities or for local communities. Beyond that, if you get a sense of this place, it's people talk about places being flat. This is flat. You sit on an alluvial plain. I'm 100 miles from the Gulf. And I think the elevation of my house is 22 feet. And everybody around me thinks I live on the ridge. So gives you some sense of how different it is. Major crops here include sugarcane. We have a unified city parish government, which is a blessing and a bane. But an interesting difference that would relate to your podcast, I think, is that we have a local electrical utility, LUS Fiber, that's been around since the late 1890s. And that was put in a very similar fashion. We followed a tradition, or at least creative one, by bringing in our local fiber utility in much the same way and under the same auspices as LUS Fiber. And that was a great resource to start with.
Well, actually, I think if I just jump in, I think the creation of the electric utility seemed to have played a major role in turning Lafayette into what it is today, 100 years ago. It was an electric and water utility.
At the time, when Lafayette's located along a river called the Vermilion, at the time, New Iberia to the south and Opelousas to the north of us were both much larger cities or towns. At one point, if I'm remembering correctly, Opelousas was a temporary capital of the state during the unfortunate war between the states.
Right. Okay.
But those were both much larger places. And Lafayette prides itself on that kind of forethought. They fought for a local university. They fought for to become a center of oil and gas industry here. They literally fought for this electrical utility when outsiders were not providing what locals felt like they needed. So yeah, that's a big part of the story, I think.
All right, so we tell the story in the case study, and I don't want to rehash that too much because your expertise is really in the organizing side. And I think people are really interested in how it was that there was so much community initiative, there was so much how there was so much just enthusiasm and outreach within the community in ways that I don't think we've seen in any other example of community broadband. We've certainly seen some examples, but you know, maybe we can start by talking a little bit about what you learned by watching the Tri-Cities of Illinois when they discussed the possibility and ultimately had two referendums, both of which were beat down by Comcast and I believe AT&T.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, the whole thing, I was in touch with some of the folks up there. They were an inspiration and a source of cautionary tales. That was a big deal, I think, in the community of people who were interested in community broadband, to watch the tri-state folks being beaten down so solidly. And to know that they came in with such a flood of money at the end.
You say they, it was the Comcast and the big companies that came in with the flood of money.
Big outside funds of money, fighting against people who were pretty local. And yes, there were lessons to be learned there. One of the lessons I think that, again, the folks I communicated with emphasized to me was not only was there a huge pot of money they were going to dump on you at the end, but you had to have the active support of your local authorities. Whoever was the respected authority in the community absolutely had to be full-throatedly for this.
Right, and that could be elected officials, it could be business people, it could be someone in academia, who knows, but you're saying the local authority, however defined, right?
Tradition calls for always in all places, invest some individuals in the community with a sort of special set of honors. And, if you can get those people behind you, behind this idea, have a much more powerful thing. And we were lucky enough in Lafayette to be able to learn the lesson from the Tri-Cities, that just to insist that it had to be that way. You had to be willing to get out in front of it. And so one of the things that really did work very well for us was to learn those lessons.
As I understand it, there was a push from multiple directions, but it really, this project really got going when Mayor Durrell came in and Terry Huval with the utility said, we are going to really start studying this and we're going to see if we can make this happen. Is that where the organizing started on your part?
Probably a little before that for me. Again, I had followed the Tri-Cities thing. There had been some thought adrift in the air here that this would be a good idea. There had been a study group several years before that had been put together by LUS Fiber and LCG, the local Lafayette Consolidated Government, to study the issue. And they had come back with a report that said that it would be a good idea to build a fiber ring, especially to support the electrical utility. In the course of that study, some of the people, both some sort of mid-sized business people and some activist types, had come to the conclusion to be even better fiber to the home and to extend it out that way. That didn't happen at that time, but that wholesale ring, the put up a big wholesale ring to put the governmental utilities on it, to take that business away from AT&T and put it, give that savings, was to the local government, was strongly opposed by AT&T. AT&T withdrew from the local chamber. There was a huge amount of outcry about it, and it all settled back down. Nobody wanted to touch with a 10-foot pole, also on cable companies at that moment. But that's part of the background. So that happened before. And it also left people with a bad taste in their mouth.
With a bad taste in their mouth because there was a sense that AT&T was ripping off the schools or in some way not meeting their needs or just in the way they treated you as outsiders?
There was a sense that they were trying to be bullies. We are AT&T. We will withdraw our support from the Chamber of Commerce. Oh, shucks. That was sort of the response.
Right. And actually, we should just clarify this was Bell South, which before it was AT&T. I really don't think it's much of a difference, but it's really Bell South became AT&T. And so it's the same people.
Right. It was Bell South throughout the fight itself in 2005. But it eventually, shortly thereafter the merger occurred, Bell South became AT&T again. You're right.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about what was happening then. There was a study committee, and you knew several of the people that were involved with it, and there was this recommendation that that they do a wholesale ring when others felt that a fiber to the home network was appropriate at that time. What sort of actions and organizing did you do at that point to start changing the discussion?
When it became an active issue, which did take place, as you mentioned, that it sort of got laid down and put on the back burner. When you mentioned Joy Durrell coming in as a newly elected mayor, instantly our first Republican mayor, probably forever. One of the interesting background pieces was that our utility director, Jerry Hubaugh, had actually endorsed his opponent, his chief opponent. And Terry, I believe, and he's told me, that he was afraid that he was going to be fired. He got called into the mayor's office early on, the very first week. What Terry actually wanted to do, greatly to his credit, was to ask him what he needed to do to keep it. he was absolutely correct in the assessment that Terry Hubaugh was a community resource, and not to be trifled with. And Terry sort of, I think, in a stunned fashion, sort of tried out, well, there is this plan I've had for quite a while, and I've been really trying to push, but nobody's really going to listen, but look at this. And Durrell sort of said, Durrell came from a very business-oriented background. He was put in by, he was backed strong, let us say, by local chamber interests, by local business interests, by a small group of four or five wealthy individuals in this town who've always been very influential.
Right, and Durrell himself was a private business owner and had been the chair of the Chamber of Commerce and was very integrated into the business community.
Absolutely. So it was something, it was a leap for him. And I think that the famous quote is something on the lines of, I don't know about this, but if we don't at least give it a fair look, well, damn us.
Yeah, I think the expression he uses is shame on us if we don't see how far we can take this.
So that was really the turning point.
So you didn't have to start by convincing your local leaders, which is tremendously helpful. But you have a large enough community that, in our experience, communities of over about 50,000 people often are very skeptical of their local leaders in ways that they're not in a smaller community. So let's talk a little bit about how you started to do some outreach.
Well, first, it probably should be said that Lafayette is a small, large middle-sized city.
Okay.
That there is a huge amount of distrust of the local leadership. There's also really serious divisions within the community, both along racial lines and along cultural lines as well. We have the traditional racial issues, I think, that our country is burdened with. But we also have the division between French-speaking, French-descended, and Americans. And so there's a lot of divisions and a lot of reasons, a lot of chess pieces in play at any political moment. The things that we did to start up, and to be frank, there were several things that we tried to begin this. And yeah, I knew one of the guys, especially, who'd been on this committee. We got together and we said we needed to get something going.
And that was Mike Stagg, right?
Mike Stagg. And we did different things, like try and arrange coffee house discussions. Didn't work.
Yeah.
We called several meetings focusing on various people, like the development or the geekery. We would find lists, we would get in touch with our friends, we would pull together a list of 60 or 70 people and invite them to a meeting. And while those all happened and worked to some extent, they didn't reach takeoff on their own. Each time we hoped they would, each time they didn't. And so it didn't just happen. What we ended up with was a large list of names of people who had expressed a positive opinion about this, focused on the geekery, focused on mid-sized businessmen, focused frankly on people, mid-sized political activists and mid-sized business people who were not gods of the chamber. And we started a discussion list online, started having more informal meetings and pulled it together much more gradually. At the very beginning, it was a tough road to hoe. I think in part because there's simply no tradition, in Lafayette at least, of economic-based activism. And I think that's probably lacking in a lot of places in this country.
And I think it's really important to point that out. I remember a formative moment in my education was on reading a biography of Mother Jones, the labor organizer, and realizing that she probably lost, you know, five or six of her organizing fights for every one that she won. And that we shouldn't get discouraged if we try to organize something like in Tri-Cities and get beat down. Because fundamentally, the lesson to learn is that you get smarter, you get better at it, and you find ways and sometimes, you know, maybe you just find the right community that wants to move forward with a project like this. But it's something that you and I have discussed a couple of times now, is that, you know, this was not inevitable in Lafayette. And when people look at Lafayette as a success story, it's hard sometimes, I think, to go back and look at all the ways in which you could have said, well, we gave it a shot. Let's move on to something else, right?
And that's, I think that's a really fair way to put it. And I would encourage anybody who's thinking about it themselves to be realistic in their assessment of the problems they're faced, but to not let it pass. We would never have succeeded if we hadn't learned the lessons of the Tri-Cities. So even failures are not. One of the big things we learned from the Tri-Cities, besides support of the leadership, demanding that it be vocal and obvious and aware if they were going to get us to help them.
So that's the first lesson, right, is making sure that you have the local leadership on the record saying, yes, we need this.
In sort of a pre-structured agreement along the lines of, you need to be willing to speak up when people challenge the integrity of the community. Tri-Cities also scared us pretty thoroughly about the power of the last 2 weeks. I did a bunch of research, all of us worked on it, and we said really we could never match them in terms of money or in terms of a final flash of power. But what we could do was inoculate the community. So every time they did anything that was a lie or was stupid or was condescending, we just went after it with hammers and tongs. And the phrase that we repeated quite often was that you really can't believe anything they say. You just can't believe a word they say. There was a blogger that didn't do a whole lot of blogging on the issue. He used that phrase once. And I picked it up, and we all picked it up and beat on it. And I think that was quite effective, the inoculation strategy, we used to call it.
I think the last thing we want to talk about here, and I think it's important, there's so much to talk about in Lafayette that we will be coming back and revisiting this with you briefly to talk about other aspects of it. But I really wanted to hit on a final lesson, I think, which is almost a jujitsu approach that you used. They had the ability to reach out and to touch every last person. Phone calls and mailers and things like that, and even organized events. But it was one call in particular that you recorded, and I think not just the recording of it, but the way you distributed it afterwards really turned their strength against them. And I can't emphasize enough how I think important it is, and so maybe you can just tell that story a little bit.
Sure. It was a great tale. A local person who had been involved in the larger, we built sort of an organization of volunteers that started with an organizing committee that met weekly, fairly large number of people. And then it tiered out to a lot of people who were active supporters. And one of the active supporters was a photographer. He was geekish. And he got a phone call and had he knew it was happening because we had blasted out, there's this misleading phone call coming, watch out for it. You know, tell us what exactly they say, you know, that kind of thing. So we blasted that out to our email list, which was in the hundreds by that time. And he was one of those people. When he picked up the phone, he turned on a voice recorder, which is legal in Louisiana, one-sided recording. And he recorded the whole thing, 20 minutes of it. And he was wonderful. I can't imagine doing as well as he did.
Right, we have the audio of it, and I'm going to put it up so people can get it as well, because it's really is just a terrific back and forth.
It's wonderful. And he goes back and forth, and he pricks on it, and he picks at them, and he pushes them to the edge to where they're about ready to hang up, and he backs off. Oh, no, tell me some more, or let me talk to your supervisor, or whatever. And so he did a wonderful job. And I think he got about, if I recall correctly, about 20 minutes worth. What we did was we took a snippet or two out of it, broke it up into very small fragments, and turned it into a viral email thing. This is before we had Facebook, dark ages, 2005, and any other easy way to pass it on except email. But it went blasting out through our email list. We encouraged people to blast it on out to their email list. And I got it back enough times that I know they just simply blasted their personal email list. And it was hilarious. It was one of the parts that we sent out was the idea that since we have scheduled water regulations here, we ask people not to water the lawns except on alternate days by your house number, that kind of thing. Since they regulate your use of water, don't you think it would be, you know, a similar thing for fiber, they will
to watch television
and control what you watch.
Our government has no business getting involved in what we watch on cable TV. Given the way the courts have been ruling on the separation of church and state, some judge may rule that we can no longer receive religious programs on a city-owned television system. Does that make you want to vote for or against the proposal?
Well, I tell you what, again, it's a ridiculous question because there are all kinds of programs there by Acadian Open Channel, which is funded by the government, and nobody stopped them.
How would you respond to this question, though?
The author of the question is an idiot. That's how I'd respond to the question.
And so you get not only do you get the silly thing said, you get the silly thing labeled right there in the moment. And that went out, that went around and around. So that was really quite a wonderful thing. You can turn lemons into lemonade.
I think it's important also to note that there were some really silly questions, but there were some really dirty, horrible questions in there too, where they were trying to stir up racial animus within the city with that call. And it's just incredibly destructive, the kind of things that they were willing to do. And you might say another lesson is to never underestimate the lengths that some of these companies will go to in order to stop a project, because they have just engaged in the dirtiest tactics.
Absolutely. And that part is the part that really enraged me. I mean, we have a north side and a south side. I live on the north side, which is mostly black. And that kind of stuff is so destructive to the local community people are trying to build. What would you say if we told you that they were never going to build it in the north side of town, on the black part of town? And that was so completely opposite. People who were really for it, that's what a large chunk of what they wanted it was, to try and unify the city more. And so that stuff, yeah, they will do unbelievable things. And be aware, too, that kind of push-pull is not just intended to influence folks directly. It also serves a secondary purpose of what will work, what will make these people crazy in the last 2 weeks. They're planning to be ugly. They're not just being ugly. They're planning to be uglier yet.
Well, the short story was that you ultimately ended up winning the referendum pretty handily. I believe it was 64%, 65%, something like that.
Yeah, 64, 63, something like
that. We'll touch base with you again, and we will continue the story because there's a lot more to talk about, the ways in which this community was organized and a lot of lessons for everyone else. One of the things that we want to talk about in a future show, I think, is ideas for people who are in a community where they might be the real tip of the spear, where they're trying to figure out exactly how to get the whole thing started. So that's something people should look forward to.
I would love that.
Terrific. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show.
And thank you.
That was Christopher and John St. Julian of Lafayette, Louisiana. Be sure to follow John's blog at blog.lafayetteprofiber.com. We look forward to talking to John again about organizing a network movement at the local level. You can also read more detailed coverage of the story of Lafayette in our case study, Broadband at the Speed of Light, How Three Communities Built Next Generation Networks. The report is available for free from ilsr.org and muninetworks.org. If you have any questions or comments, email us directly at podcast@muninetworks.org. Our handle on Twitter is @communitynets. This show was released on October 30th, 2012. Thanks to Fit and the Conniptions for the music, licensed using Creative Commons. The song is called Got My Modem Workin'.